So I asked the question, what do you think, you know, your partner, what do you think that? And they can't for the life of them. I said, you know, I've been sitting with you for 15 minutes. I can tell you exactly what they feel and what they desire and what they're not getting. How is it that you do not know? Because they're too busy feeling their own feelings. Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. We've been on the road for a bit. It's nice to be back.
Mexico, Rome, London, New York.
Here we are.
Excited to be back home. And
until we're off to LA.
Yes. And with all of our friends and listeners on the podcast.
All right. Have you ever found yourself?
Yes.
I don't think you have. Well, maybe not with me anyway. Biting your tongue in a relationship just to keep the peace until one day you explode and your partner is completely blindsided. Or maybe you were the blindsided partner.
Wow. No, but that's a lot of stuff.
Or maybe you're just shut down. It's been so much for so long that you feel numb. Over time, unspoken frustrations accumulate, and because one partner suppressed their feelings for so long, they break. And it becomes an explosive conversation. And I think that we were excited, or not really excited, but I think this was at the forefront of our minds because in the last couple of weeks, in all of our travels, this was the theme that I stumbled across with many of the couples that I counseled over the last couple of weeks.
And I would add, because you know, some of our listeners are not, there are those obviously who are in a long-term relationship, and what we're going to speak about today is very important for them. But I think it's also the understanding, even those of our listeners who are not in a relationship, who want to be in a relationship, that what we're going to share today and where you don't want to get to is where most people get to. And I think that's a very important understanding that, you know, we've spoken about this in previous podcasts. We have not, meaning humanity, people, do not study, do not practice great relationship building. We sort of stumble into it and for some strange reason, assume we'll be good at it, right?
I always say, how can you be good at something you've never practiced?
Exactly. So,
but even this is not just romantic relationships. I think if our listeners just consider their most important relationship at this moment or the relationship they care most about, I'm sure they're going to see these kinds of themes that come up because this is about communication. This is about loving yourself. This is about how you show up for those that you love. And of course, it's more heightened in a romantic relationship because you're with them all the time and they're your mirror. And it's obviously you get triggered and buttons get pressed more often.
And the thing is, that's an important point because we're with our spouse, partner, so much of the time, if we're not careful, the weight of the both the time plus what we're not so happy about, you know, if you're seeing somebody once a year, you could say, okay, something happened I didn't like, let me talk about it, right? But I think what happens subconsciously or subconsciously is we say, oh my God, I'm spending the next 50 years with this person. I can't, you know, argue about every dish left unwashed in the, you know, in the sink or every time they, you know, they leave the toilet seat open.
You'd be surprised, my friend.
Well, yeah, but the point is, I think we consciously or subconsciously decide I'm going to, out of the 10 things that bothered me today, maybe I'll talk about one, maybe I'll talk about none. Out of the 100 things that bothered me this week, maybe I'll talk about one. I think part of it is just the fact that we just don't want to have to expend the energy.
But more than that, the things that people often decide to talk about are the less important things, right? That's, because they don't want to deal with that pushback or the blow up or, you know, it's horrible to lie next to somebody you're not speaking to, right?
So there's two sides to that. One where there's acrimony. The other one, which is worse, where there's no acrimony, right? Where you're just passive.
So there's a word for that instead of no acrimony.
I'm sorry. But I think that what we're hopefully inspiring ourselves and our listeners today is don't let your relationship stagnate.
So I'm really excited to unpack a bunch of these things. And I think one other thing that we need to mention is that not voicing your feelings only leads to resentment. And then eventually a person, you know, we go through these different states of mind. I think first, when we start a relationship, we care too much what the other person thinks. And so we're on our best behavior and we're, you know, all of those endorphins are flowing. We feel all of the different feelings of euphoria. So best behavior. And then, of course, that fades. And then we start to hold our tongues to the point where we no longer repress our feelings. And then we live in a sea of resentment. And I think once a relationship gets to that point of resentment, it's very hard to turn around. It's not impossible, but it requires a lot more work and a lot more effort. So I think our intention today in this conversation is to give tips and tools that are really just so practical. And they're not that, they're actually quite simple. They're hard to practice at first, but once you do, it's quite easy. So I think that these kinds of situations arise for people for different reasons. I think for some, there's a fear of conflict. So many people are afraid of that going into a relationship. I mean, I think even with our own children, some of our kids naturally avoid conflict. Others don't, right? And when I've recognized that in the ones that do, I always encourage, okay, let's talk about this. I can sense that you're feeling something. It's okay to talk about it. You should talk about it. What are you feeling? There's nothing you can't tell me. To really encourage for them to get in touch with that part of themselves. For others, it's people-pleasing tendencies. It's they have been trained or raised in an environment where what you feel matters more than what I'm feeling, or your feelings are more important. Mine probably aren't. I've seen that happen a lot. And guess what? Around year seven, they can't take it anymore. So even with people who are trained like that, they get to a place and then resentment's full on. It's like immediate. And then I think the one that confuses me the most when I hear it from people is, you know, they say, I'm just not going to say anything because I'm keeping everything in balance. I'm keeping everything afloat. I need to keep the peace, make sure the children are okay. And, you know, and it's usually men, by the way, and the wife's okay. And I'm just going to balance this here, which is ridiculous because that's not even a possibility. And then for others, and I think that's the other point I want to make, is that they tell themselves that this isn't really a big enough deal to bring up. So they don't say anything and then there's no resolution, right? And then the next one, it's not a big deal. And the next, and guess what? Eventually it's a really big deal.
I think that's a very important point. And I want to really bring our listeners' attention to a concept, micro resentment, right? Mm. So we've seen, unfortunately, and heard from couples who have been in a relationship long enough where the resentment built up. But I'd like our listeners, those of you who are in a relationship for one day or for one week, for one month, certainly if it's longer than that, and ask yourself the question, what are the micro resentments that I have? And I'm sure you do have.
Well, give us an example.
Well, it could be something as silly as, you know, I wanted to go to this restaurant and you didn't care and you chose this restaurant.
But do you think that micro resentment's based on all the other times they had given?
No, this might be. But the point is again,
that immediate, like, oh, I didn't.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Because my point is, even if it's their first date, right, they're not going to mention it, right? But they're going to say, wait, why didn't you ask me what kind of food I like? And I think the point is,
I think it starts as a grievance. I'm not sure it's a resentment right straight away.
I think those are, that's
semantics.
And the reason why that's so important to pay attention to the micro resentments, because like you said, over time it builds up. But more important is that if you don't address them simply when they're small, and this is what happens, is that at a certain point you look back and you're like, oh my God, there's just so many things to talk about. Better not talk about any of them. Whereas if you're more proactive in the silly stuff, the small stuff, then that doesn't build up to this place where you say, oh my God, I just can't talk about anything, because that opens up a whole Pandora's box and I don't want to talk about all those things. I don't have the energy. I have to work in the morning and I have kids to take care of. It's just not the exercise of energy just seems too great to try to solve this. I think the first thing that I would, even for those who are in a relationship where there is a buildup, I would say, start talking about the silly stuff, the small stuff. Again, without and from the right place. Like, oh, by the way, you know, you chose this restaurant to dinner. You know, just so you know, next time I really would rather go this one. Like, it's not a fight. It's not even an argument. It's a sharing so that you don't hold that in.
Well, it's interesting. Talk about silly arguments. Remember, I witnessed one between two women who are, you know, normally sane and kind, and they were fighting over the level of toastiness a piece of toast should be for a teething toddler. And I'm not even joking. And they were recriminations, they were tears. I mean,
two women?
Yeah. Because one had one opinion, the other one had the other.
Were they related to the child that was eating the toast? They were just having this argument.
One was a caretaker. And one had a different role. And full on for like 10 minutes, and they just could not agree. And that was the beginning and end of that relationship. They never spoke. They worked kind of as colleagues side by side. And it was just interesting to watch. And that was immediate resentment. And nothing could build from there. Nothing ever after that point.
So
it's a funny argument.
It's a pretty funny argument. It's a silly argument. But what I would hopefully recommend for our listeners is try to take as many opportunities on the small stuff, on the silly stuff. And again, not an argument, but a sharing of opinion, what's going on inside. Otherwise, again, it can lead to a buildup.
And the person might not receive it well, right? But sometimes things need to get worse before they get better. The point is, there's no downside in sharing how you feel. You can be thoughtful about it. You can pick the right time, the right choice of words, but in doing that, you create a relationship that you ultimately want. And holding your tongue, there really is no way but going backwards. So one of the things I see a lot in relationships to this point is restriction versus suppression. And in Kabbalah, we teach a lot about restriction, which I'll unpack in a minute, but it's different than repression or suppression. And so I'll just tell you what the three are. Repression is an unconscious process of blocking thoughts and feelings. Suppression is a conscious effort to avoid or control them. And then restriction is a three-step process where you recognize how you're feeling, you stop the reaction, right? And then you decide what you want your response to be. And more than that, you see what the opportunity is, right? So,
do you mind just repeating that? I didn't get the first two clearly.
So again, there's three: restriction, suppression, repression.
So, of which you're saying one is good, two are not.
Correct.
Okay.
And I think that often people, I see this a lot with people who study Kabbalah, like, I don't understand, I'm restricting, but I feel so angry inside, or I'm restricting and nothing's changing. That's not restriction, right? So repression is an unconscious process of blocking thoughts or feelings. You're not really conscious of this.
All right, okay.
Suppression is a conscious effort to avoid or control your thoughts.
Your actions or your thoughts?
Your actions. Let me think for a second. Your actions. And then restriction is you take the time to feel your reaction. You then pause and you decide how you want to react to it, and you choose the response and even ultimately see the gift and the opportunity that's presented, because that's a whole much deeper thing. Why is somebody in your movie? Why are you married to the person you're married to? Why do you have these opportunities right and left that really push your buttons? So when we restrict and we approach those conversations from that place, you'll have a very different outcome. But the first two, repression, suppression, you're not going to get anywhere at all. You still will feel angry inside. By the way, those people who are not even speaking their minds, you know what's happening. The blood is boiling inside. It's just not coming out. It's not like those feelings are nowhere. They're there, but you're the only one experiencing. And then that becomes so uncomfortable. So eventually you have to lash out at your partner because you have nothing else to do with the feelings that you've been holding in. And there's an interesting study, actually, I don't know if this would still be true. It's from 2011. They found that high conflict avoidance in a relationship will likely cause relationship dissatisfaction for women, not so much for men.
Oh, really? Why is that? Because men don't want to be bothered.
I think so. But this is 2011. I don't think that I wonder.
You know what? I think it's just
because they're feelings. Men are very emotional.
I really think it's just a matter of time. Meaning men can go 20 longer,
years.
Longer.
And then they shut down.
And then they shut down. Women will shut. Maybe we'll take less time to get to that same place. But I think for me, and as you said, we had this opportunity in the past few weeks to really be around couples that are, you know, we'll call it struggling to be in a great place. And I think there's a phrase that I came across as I was thinking about this podcast. You know, the emotional undercurrent of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to, for our listeners, and this is something that always surprises me, if, you know,
I like that, though, those words together.
If we asked, you know, those three couples that we were speaking about, or more that we were actually spending time with over the past few weeks, and, you know, what is the emotional undercurrent of your relationship? If they're honest, if they would be honest with themselves, I think they would say it's not great. Some of them might even say it's terrible. But
murky, cold. I mean, I can tell you
exactly. And this brings me back. So the
isolating, silent,
right? I mean, and the other word which I said before, which I think is really important, is stagnation. Stagnation. What happens with stagnant water? Right. Disease breeds in there. Yeah. It starts to smell. It's not pleasant. And I am always shocked when I see a couple that has the foundation of love. Right, we see couples that don't have that foundation of love, and that's obviously much more complicated. But especially in the relationships that have that foundation of love, but because often just there's so many things happening in life, that they allow their relationships to stagnate or worse, and they are either unaware or do not realize the danger of the emotional undercurrent of their relationships. So this is something you and I try to be as cognizant of as possible. But I really ask our listeners to stop right now, if you're in a relationship, and ask yourself, what's the emotional undercurrent of your relationship? Not whether you're having fun at dinner, or you had fun at that party you went to, or you had a great date night. What's the emotional undercurrent?
But this is really the crux of the problem, because most could not answer that for their partner, right?
Well, you stole my next line.
Because I meet with so many people and I'm sitting there and I'm so clear what each one of them are feeling. And then, so I ask the question, what do you think, you know, your partner, what do you think that? And they can't for the life of them. I said, I've been sitting with you for 15 minutes. I can tell you exactly what they feel and what they desire and what they're not getting. How is it that you do not know? Because they're too busy feeling their own feelings.
I think that, okay, I got. I'm really excited about what you just said, because if our listeners get nothing else from today's podcast, I think what you just said is a foundational tool to create the relationship that we all want. So stop for a moment and ask yourself the question. I just said, what is the emotional undercurrent? And you rightfully said, I'd be saying that from my perspective. Or our listener would be saying that from their perspective. Now, stop and think, what is your partner's understanding of the emotional undercurrent of your relationship? The answer might be, I don't know. That should be a red flag. The answer might be, it's not so great. And that's another red flag. Or, you know, best case scenario, it's beautiful, it's loving and it's powerful and it's connected. It's possible.
By the way, sometimes they answer with, I don't know, they tell me it's this, and that, so it must be, which means the ego's got a whole grip and they're not even accepting what is being said.
So what we're saying is, if you can't answer, again, you're sitting in the room by yourself, you're not with your partner, right? You're sitting in the room by yourself and you're trying to assess whether your relationship is in a healthy place, in a thriving place, in a place where it could actually be filled with love and blessings as it's, and grow all the time. If you can't answer that question, and I am shocked, like you said, and you see this more often than I, because you deal with more couples than I do, how disconnected one partner is from the other partner's experience of the relationship.
I mean, honestly, I saw it just a week ago.
Yeah, so maybe share an example, obviously, without names.
I would never say names, but I hadn't seen quite in such a clear, I mean, I was kind of stunned, to be honest. So she was going, this was a fight from, which is going to lead to my next point, but it's a fight from years ago. And he has a lot of resentment that he allowed for her to influence him in his decision. It was something about, he was married before, something about his other child. And he has a lot of regret on top of it. So regret first, and he resents her. So now we're back at that fight, right? This is like from 8 years ago. And she starts to say all this stuff and adding new information but your parents told me this, that stuff he had never heard before. And he has a fraught relationship with his parents. And I knew that, and she certainly knows that. And I don't know him very well, by the way. I've just started working with him for a couple of weeks. So she's going on, and she's talking to Lovell. She's not even looking at him. They're sitting on a couch across from me, and going on with her narrative and trying to. She started with, I understand. She knew that was the right thing to say, your feelings. And then she started to go into a whole narrative of why this had to be done that way. But she was trying to apologize, but she went on this whole thing that was the opposite of an apology. Because fundamentally, she probably doesn't believe it. She probably thinks it was still the right thing to do because she wouldn't have wanted that reality. But then to bring the parents in, that was a whole other layer. And she's going, and now, so now I'm looking at him as she's saying it, because I know that's going to be a trigger for him. His eyes start to get huge and he starts to look really angry. And then what really hurt me was he looked sad. He looked so wounded. And I looked at her, I said, what are you doing? I don't understand. Like, look at your husband. What do you see? And she couldn't even, she looked and then she looked away. And I'm like, he's angry and now he's sad. And then he felt heard. And so then he sat up and he felt better a little bit, right? But that's what happens in relationships all the time. And it's not that, you know, because she is a thoughtful person. She's a kind person. I really love her. My experience of her is absolutely lovely, right? She, in that relationship, they've gotten to a place where they're not even friends anymore. And all they do is share how their own pain, their own, so they could never answer that question. They could answer the current that they're experiencing, but not what the other person is or how to get out of that then. I mean, remember, after that day I came home and I was like, I feel a little sad because normally I'm able to be, it doesn't affect me. I'm able to be even, but I was just like, I guess really saw it in real time. It wasn't something that they were telling me about. I was watching it happen. And I think that's what it was.
So I think, like I said, I think this is such an important issue or revelation to really meditate upon for our listeners. If I asked you, why do you think, using this one example, and I'm sure you have many, somebody who is a loving person, a kind person, an empathetic person, is it that her hurt is so strong that it doesn't allow her even to ask the question?
No, it's not that.
No, what is it?
It's that she doesn't want the outcome that he wants in a lot of the situations. Of course, the ultimate outcome of staying married, she does want, and he does want. But how they get to the place of happily ever after is very different in both of their views, and they're butting heads on it. And so they pose as on opposite sides of the fence. They're more like enemies in those situations, which are now more and more frequent than friends, to the point where they're not really friends anymore. And then it's almost impossible to be lovers, right? So that's the reality. And this is the next point. And I talk about this tool a lot. People confuse the difference between compromise and sacrifice. So many people make this mistake. And then what happens is if you think you're making a compromise, but you're sacrificing time and time and time again, guess what? You're going to start to feel resentment again. You're going to go back to that same thing. It's one of the ways to get you there the fastest. So compromise is that there's a situation and both of us want two different things, right? In those cases, you have to look to see who is it more important to. So for instance, if you and I both wanted to go to dinner, it's a very stupid example, and you wanted steak and it was too late. It was 9 o'clock and I can't digest meat that late. This is actually something we would talk about. We wouldn't argue about it, but that is a conversation. Or even 8 o'clock, right? So I would say, you know, I kind of really want steak too, but it's just going to, I can't, it will be too hard for me. So who's going to suffer more in that situation? You'll enjoy the steak more than maybe the meal we would go have. But you'd still enjoy the meal because we'd have the company and I wouldn't suffer with a stomach ache, right? So clearly that compromise, you would lean in because I'm the one that it would matter more to. And if there was a different scenario where something was more important to you, I would lean in.
I think this is an important tool for our listeners to think about. But also, I think, and the next step is, and don't hold that as a micro resentment.
Well, right? Yeah, if you love your partner, by the way, you'd be happy.
But people do, though. But people do, right? Even on the silly things that clearly is something they should have compromised about.
But I think it's like, if I think what happens with the micro resentments, because I really do, I like the name of it, but I'm not sure I fully agree. I think
I'll just use it.
If a person feels like they're always giving in. Now, this might not be a true reality. They might, in their mind, feel like they're always giving in. Maybe they always give in to their boss at work because that's the situation. Or maybe they're always giving in with their parents because they were raised in a guilty environment in their home when they were young. So now it comes to the marriage, who they feel safe and secure with. And so giving in any way now is like, no, I don't want to. I always give in. But you might not be giving in to your partner. So my point is, we are so complex and nuanced. And unless you're really asking yourself these questions and unpacking it, it's easy to misplace your emotions and feelings to your partner when really you need to have the conversation with your boss or your parents, right? A lot of this stuff is what happened in our childhood. And now we're putting in, I'm an adult now, I'm going to make different choices. Well, that's fine, but don't bring in the baggage and make the choices based on that. So that's compromise. Sacrifice is very different.
But by the way, before you go to sacrifice, I wonder of the couples and the people that you counsel, how many of them are clear on when they should compromise? Because I would assume not.
That's why I talk about this. Yeah. I'm telling you, I did it for the Rethink It Masterclass. It was a whole section. People were having like aha moments right and left. Everybody is confused about the difference between compromise and sacrifice.
And I think one of the things we talk about a lot is that if you're in a relationship, make this a topic of conversation. You know, like you said, especially on the small things, which restaurant we're going to go to, and talk it through. Who should compromise here? Who would suffer more?
Talk about it ahead of time. We never decide those things last minute. We'll talk about it in the morning, and then in the afternoon, I'll change my mind again. We'll talk about it, and then right before we go to dinner, like, do you really feel like that? But you love me, and you know me, and we'll make two reservations, and we'll decide how we feel. It's an easy way to give in. It's not, you know. I mean, I remember one of our early on. this is before I understood the difference between, I mean, before I understood anything really about relationships, but I was so shocked when we first got married, how messy you were with your clothes.
Thank you. You just embarrassed me in front of all of our listeners.
I mean, you're not like that anymore, but like, I just was, wow, shocked. I mean, there was a sock. And then the other sock was across the room. And then there was the pants. And then there was the t-shirt. And I was like, where's my husband? I see all his clothes everywhere on the floor. So we used to fight about that. It really bothered me. I am a Virgo. And also, it just bothered. Now you know this about me. I didn't even know this about myself. I need clean space and I need like beauty, or it affects my mood. It's just part of my, there's actually a lot of people like that. Even if you're not a Virgo, I've come to understand. So we would fight about this and we weren't getting anywhere. And then I had a really genius idea, if I do say my, it took a while, but then I bought a chair for you and I suggested that you just pile all your clothes on that chair, and I could deal with the messy chair. I couldn't deal with the messy room and the messy house, right? And the other part of that compromise was, and it could stay there all week, but come Friday, just hang up your clothes. And you agreed and we compromised and we still have a chair in our bedroom to this day. It's a bigger chair, but we do, right? So I think that there's, if you want to meet each other, and that's the point, if you want to, you will get there.
And if I can just add one more thing, and this is a spiritual Kabbalistic principle. We make the mistake of thinking that our relationship will grow the more you give me. When in reality, love will grow the more I give you. Mm-hmm. We love those to whom we give the most. And I think most people have the backward view on what will grow the love. We know what we want in a relationship. I want to get a lot of things from you. But I know the fundamental truth that if I want my love to you, for you to grow, I need to find ways to give. And in the small compromises, if I view it not, oh, I have to do this because it's more important to you than to me. Actually, I'm excited to do this because this isn't that important to me, but it's also something I can do for you.
Exactly.
And that is something I'm so excited now. One more, you know, level of love that I know will grow because of that action.
Then sacrifice is when you give up something that you deeply value or believe in. And that you will always regret. So there's something I came up with called a now and later test. This is how it works. You ask yourself, if you're faced with a decision or a challenge between you and your partner, you ask yourself, how will I feel about my choice in 10 minutes and in 10 years? Because that gives you perspective. In 10 minutes, usually we're still upset about all kinds of things and they're usually silly and we'll get over it. But in 10 years, if you feel like this is still going to bother you, you know that this is a sacrifice and not a compromise and you should never make it. And vice versa, in 10 years, if you're not even going to remember what the conversation was, then that's where you can give in. I see this so often with people that they make huge choices. So they think, oh, love is enough. And they don't go after their other passions or their careers, or they don't have children and they desperately want, but their partner doesn't. And they say, yeah, it's not going to bother me. It's not going to bother me. Well, you know, 10 years down the line, think about that. Will it bother you then? And usually you're going to get the clarity.
Again, I think this is an important conversation framed in this way, because I was going to ask you actually a tough question. What would you do, like, for instance, the couple you were talking about before that had an issue that happened, what was it, 7 years ago, 10 years ago? What happened if they come to an impasse then? Right? One partner says, no, actually, this is a sacrifice, too big of a sacrifice for me. And because people in the moment are not thinking about what they're going to be feeling 10 years from now. Right? So that's
why that this works so well, because first of all, there's so many things to do before that. No, I'm not going to do it. Right? She could have said, okay, your son can come live with us for a summer. Let's try it. Or let's try it for 6 months. But I need your word that if it doesn't work for these reasons, then we're going to revisit this. Or this isn't the right time, but let's try. And there's so many other things, right? Because if she then was able to fast forward, and 10 years from now, this child who was 8 will be 18. The relationship's going to be different. He's never going to get back those years with his son. And I don't want him to blame me for it. How can we approach this in a way that we can both come to some kind of resolution? There's just always so many more options before it's my way or your way.
I think this underscores a very important understanding that most
because
people,
by the way, to your point, now the relationship's damaged because of that choice, right? So it's you're going to get there anyway. Like, okay, if they're at an impasse and what do we do, and they're butting heads and we can't make it, well, you know what, in 10 years from now, if you force your decision on this and the other person acquiesces because maybe that's their nature, or maybe because they're afraid or whatever it is, you're going to get to that same place 10 years from now.
But I think this is a really important point, and I want to underscore it. there's a quote that I saw recently. I forgot the exact quote, but it's that maturity or being an adult is your current self making a decision based on your future self, mm-hmm. right? So if you sat them down, let's say, and this is just one example, but it's true of so many other things.
By the way, I wished after I heard the fight in real time, I thought to myself, I wish I could have been there 8 years ago.
But what would have, let me walk you through what would have happened. He would have said, I want this. She would have said no. And she would have been strong in her no, because right now she felt the relationship's fine. I just don't want this additional headache. But
no, but what she said to him is, if you do this, it will be the end of our marriage. It will ruin us, which she scared him. Yes. So that fear, because he's fear-based, it fed the fear, and then he responded to that.
So what is very difficult to do, and what we're asking our listeners to think about deeply, is if she could have sat down for a day or a week or a month and said, I love this person. I want to be together with them forever. There's a possibility that this sacrifice that I'm asking them to make, they're not going to leave me because of it now. But 10 years from now, it's likely that that is going to be a pent-up resentment that either will blow up our relationship or will not make it a beautiful and love-filled,
safe, trusting,
thriving relationship. But I want to say is that this is very, people, you know, I often say this, one of my friends who's in private equity, he always, one of my favorite quotes that he said to me was that people always underestimate the downside risk, right? Meaning, and I had a conversation with somebody today where, you know, people take risks and they think they have some general idea of, you know what, you know, oh yeah, if something goes wrong, I'll know how to handle. So what we're really asking
it's
our,
like,
listeners,
what's that movie, Polly? With Ben Stiller and Jennifer Aniston.
Along Came Polly.
That's what he does for a living. Everything is like the risk factor, high risk, low risk. And that's what he does for a living. And then the whole thing was the relationships. Like, he loved her, but she was high risk. And then somebody else was like a safer choice and whatever.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you recommend that movie?
That's cute.
Maybe I saw it a long time. I remember it. But
you saw it.
I did. Yeah, we saw it together. But what we're asking our listeners, and really, and this takes, you know, a real, I don't know, developed consciousness on the big things. I'm asking my partner not to have a career. I'm asking my partner not to do things that are important to him or her. What if, right? What if this that I'm asking them to sacrifice 7 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, causes our relationship to be at a stalemate, in a place that's not growing, that when it becomes a, you know, an undercurrent of negative emotions? And really think about that, because again, I think, you know, like, we, this is the reality. The reality is human beings as a species underestimate downside risk, and therefore we don't give enough weight when we ask our partner to sacrifice. We're just, oh my God, great, I got my way.
But think about this, especially in this example. If she wasn't going to make a sacrifice in this, he had to make the sacrifice, which was sacrificing his relationship with his son, right? So this is a lose-lose. Nobody should have said, this had to be something of a compromise.
Right.
And they had to work tirelessly care if it took a year to get there versus 8 years later, this is where we're at.
Right.
So there's no other way to go
and
about it.
And I think in great ways and small ways, many couples do this to each other throughout the relationship. And that's what causes the breaking point. Like, you know, there's another couple that I know that you work with, and he is unknowingly asking her to make many sacrifices, even in being herself.
That happens a lot.
And I can't even say he's happy about it at this point, but, you know, he's getting his way. But there's no way that if this continues and doesn't change drastically in the next 1 year, 5 years,
got
10 years.
Got his way today, but what's exactly it going to look like 10 years from now?
And I'm very mindful of the fact, and maybe men suffer from this more than women, in that, like, if I can just not have to deal with it now, and if I get my way, even better, but you're not really thinking about the emotional undercurrent, and certainly not thinking about what this is going to make the relationship look like in 5 years and 10 years.
But I think part of that is that I think women, because a lot, again, men get a bad rap that they're not emotional. I fundamentally disagree. I think they're very, very emotional. Women have more practice at expressing their emotions because we're given that feedback early on that it's okay to do it, and it's encouraged, where it's not encouraged for men. Don't cry, be strong, act stoic, right? So they get a completely different schooling in that. by the time they get in touch with how they're feeling, a lot of things have happened. And by the time they express them, even more so, right? So that's part of the issue.
So I hope our listeners got a lot out of today's podcast, but at the core, and this is something that you and I spoke about and really awakened me to this really prevalent issue in relationships. Deal with it. I think that's the bottom line of all this. I know we're all very busy, and especially those of us who have jobs and kids and a lot going on. We were sitting together with a couple last week, and I was like, nothing you're doing in life right now, and they are doing very important work and they have family and so on and so forth, because this is going to blow up. Now, blow up doesn't mean you're going to have a terrible divorce, but it does mean that your relationship will deteriorate further and further and further and further. And you might stay married for the next 30 years.
Be miserable.
Exactly. Exactly.
I never understand. I'll never understand.
I understand.
What is the point of it all if you keep carrying along your hurt and your pain and your suffering and do nothing about it? I just don't know. Why be in an unhappy relationship? Well, I mean, I know it's hard to undo. I get it. I really do. So then do something with it. But exactly. To stay in that state of stagnation, exactly. That I will never understand.
Exactly. So I think hopefully we're very inspired to really call out to our listeners, whether you're in a relationship for a day, for a week, for a month, for 10 years, deal with it. Which means first assess what is the emotional undercurrent that I am feeling from this relationship, and be honest and ask what is my partner's emotional undercurrent, what's their feeling in this relationship. And if it's not amazing, and it's not going to be amazing, if it's not great, if it's so-so, if it's not so great, deal with it today. And don't be overwhelmed by the list of 100 things that need to be dealt with. Deal with one of them today and one of them tomorrow. This is the only way that your relationship can become what it is meant to become. And again, the saddest thing is to see two people who actually love each other.
And who've created a good life together. Children.
Not have an amazing, thriving relationship, which is possible. I have to say, like, you know, I'm sure you see this, you know, I don't want to say frustrating, but it's sad. It's sad because you see two people who if they took the time and did the work and dealt with it, even though it's uncomfortable and even though there's so much more going on, you can have an amazing relationship. And by the way, that'll make everything else that you do so much better.
I think because in working with couples, I've kind of train myself to just like look, you know, I just see it, right? So like even if I'm watching a show and the woman talk, like this is yesterday, I started a show, Adolescent, it's pretty good so far, but the wife said something to the husband, I was like, well, that's not nice, why'd she? And I'm like, what are you doing? It's not even a relationship show. Or then I even look back at like my parents, you know, and I go back to all the years and the different places we lived and the homes, and I see things in pictures. So when I envision or I visualize the home we lived in, I see the fights, I see everything, right? And I go back and I was like, why did they handle it that way? And it could have been just such a different life. And right. I think that's the sadness and the pain for me. Like for all the couples, it could be so different, and people just don't think it's possible. And we're here to tell you that it absolutely is.
Absolutely. So we hope you are inspired by today's podcast to do whatever is necessary to make your current relationship that much better. Slowly but surely, but don't let it stagnate, and don't let the emotional undercurrent not be the most amazing that it can be. It's sad to see, but it's more often than not. But hopefully, after today's podcast, all of our listeners will take the opportunity to really take all everything we shared in and do what is necessary to deal with it and make their relationship the most amazing that it can be.
Stay spiritually hungry.
Hey, I'm not done yet.
Oopsie.
This is a great moment.
I'm done. How's that for communicating? Yes.
There's actually a few amazing letters that you sent us, emails you sent us that we didn't have an opportunity to read today. We will read some of them next episode. Continue to send your emails, stories, comments, topic ideas for podcast to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. We read the emails. We are inspired by them. Our listeners are inspired by them when we share them with them. Share this with everybody you know, because everybody you know is in or going to be in a relationship, and make it their best by using the tools that we share today. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.